Genug vom täglichen Grind. Spiele Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und grinde, als wär's 2002. Ein legendäres Remake der Originalspiele mit neuen Parks, krasseren Tricks, plattformübergreifendem Multiplayer und abgefahrenen neuen Spielmodi. Hol dir das neue Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und zeig der Welt, der Shred stirbt nie. Jetzt vorbestellen auf tonyhawkthegame.com/playnow. Verfügbar ab dem 11. Juli.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Axe of Blood God, U.S. Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me today is our guest host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to have also a special guest in the second segment. His name is Brian Weedeye, and he runs a site called Pasta Padre, because we're going to be talking about sports games as RPGs.
Oh, boy, that sounds right up your alley.
Yeah, just a little bit, right? In the second segment, we do actually bring up Pocket Card Jockey.
Oh, nice.
Yes, I managed to get a reference of that in there. Also, Captain Tsubasa. He had no idea what the hell I was talking about. But that doesn't matter. We're also going to be talking about a little bit about Persona 5. We're going to be talking about Dragon Quest on mobile. And we're going to be talking about Wasteland 3, which was just announced.
Yes. Like,
literally as we were starting to record this podcast.
That is really good timing. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. You gave us something to talk about. Yeah, we had to cancel the flagship pod earlier this week because we were like, we already talked about like most of the big stuff that's coming out this week, and there's no real news.
Yeah, everyone's interesting this week.
I mean, I guess we could have done like some podcasts and talked about wrestling for 3 hours.
Yeah, I could have done that.
Yes, let's take shots at like the competition that's like 8 times bigger than we are.
I can talk wrestling, like kind of. I can fake it.
Whoa, you can talk wrestling?
A bit, yeah.
Oh, man. You know, I don't really watch wrestling or care about wrestling, but I can also fake talk about it, too.
Yeah, it's like my husband's really into it, and I kind of absorb a lot through osmosis, so.
A lot of the people that I know are like super into it, so they're always going on about these people, and I'm like, yes, storylines, heels, and baby faces. Yes.
Is Hulk Hogan still a thing? Yes, he is.
Is he? Well, I know that he brought down Gawker. Good job, Hulk.
He wishes he was still, like, you know, the Hulkster. He never quite grew out of that mentality.
Yeah, well, you know, when you make an entire career out of it, it kind of becomes you, right? It, like, stops being a character. You become that character. Just ask Mr. T.
I pity the fool.
Yes, he has been subsumed. But speaking of becoming a character, Persona 5, I've been playing it. So last week, we had Elliot Gay on the podcast to talk about the import version of Persona 5. He's like 40 hours into it. I ended up importing it myself. I streamed it on Tuesday. I'm a couple hours into it. And, you know, I can barely understand, like, my Japanese is really rusty, Nadia.
You got a leg up on me because I understand no Japanese, except I can recognize the word Mega Man and Rockman even, and that's about it.
Yeah, I can I can understand just enough, but even like my basic kanji is like really breaking down, which is super unfortunate.
Mm.
And this game is kanji freaking heavy.
I guess it would be, yeah.
Yeah, but even with that, I'm actually, it's already got its hooks in me a little bit.
Oh, but like, I just get so frustrated when I'm playing a game, especially a story-heavy game like Persona, and I can't understand what the hell is going on. That makes me so mad. So kudos to you for even trying.
I mean, I can understand what's going on. Like, the context is kind of enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they're standing in a strange in what is supposed to be the school that they're going to, and they're surrounded by like guys with axes, and they're like going, "What the hell?" I think that's pretty apparent, like what's going on. I can kind of get it from context, you know.
Fight or die. There are your choices.
And thankfully, the actual menus are mostly in English.
Oh, good.
I mean, selecting a spell is not in English. Like, the spells are in Japanese, but you have a helpful little icon that tells you if it's going to be a physical or a kind of more of an elemental attack, which is very helpful.
Okay.
And like gun and persona and attack, like those are all in English.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of doing okay on that front.
So you're getting by. You're killing everyone who needs to be killed and sparing everyone who should probably stay alive.
Yes, exactly. So, yes, I know that you have not played Persona, but...
No, but I was thinking, you know what? I was talking to my husband about this, and as you know, maybe some of the listeners know as well, I'm going for surgery in November, and I'll be out of commission for a little bit. And I was thinking, you know what? Maybe I'll buy a Vita, and I'll buy Persona 4, for God's sake.
There you
sake.
Go. Yeah, get Persona 4 Golden. That can be your homework, and then in January, like, we can, like, talk about it, and you can just keep giving us regular updates on your Persona 4 progress.
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
All right, Nani, you're going to really like this series. Like, I can't believe you haven't played it yet.
Yeah, all my friends are, like, super into it, and I'm just like, God, like I said, even the girl who sells me my cat food is just like, every time I see her, she's always, Persona 5, Persona 5, oh my God, I got delayed, I want to kill myself.
But Persona 5, it does start about as slowly as Persona 4 does.
Mm-hmm.
So it, as Elliot was telling us, it does start in media res. It does start much later down the line in the story, and that's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. You're like hopping across chandeliers, and like people are like gasping and pointing. There's a brief battle. Like there's a lot of tutorial stuff.
Yeah.
And then you get arrested.
Oh boy.
And they start interrogating you, and that's when you start telling the story.
Oh, cool. I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So I think, like, that's the setup for the story, so I don't think it's really, like, context. Or I don't think it's really spoilers to say
no,
this. But
I don't think so.
If you don't want to hear about the first, like, 30 minutes to an hour of the game, then maybe stop listening right now. But then afterward, you, like, go back. And of course, as we were discussing on the previous podcast, like your character has committed a crime and he has been kind of shipped off. You're living like above a coffee shop and you're starting school and everything. And you've got this weird logo on your phone that just will not go away. It's like it's downloaded this annoying app and it keeps going.
Well, that's what happens when you surf for porn on your phone and you don't have a proper antivirus.
Like, the InfoWars guys are just like, aha, at last, the Illuminati, the connection right here, Persona 5 is a vehicle for the Illuminati or something. Or it's trying to tell us that we are all under control, wake up, sheeple, etc. So, but you eventually it kind of picks up about 45 minutes in when you are heading to school and instead you find a castle.
Well, that's a bit of a trek off the beaten path.
Yes, and I think he's your gym teacher. He's like wearing like workout stuff. Is like, well, he's wearing like a king's outfit with nothing underneath, like the king's kind of like cape with nothing underneath and a crown. He's a little bit crazy. He's wearing a bikini. Yeah, question. And I'm not going to question it. And you're like going, what is going on? And that's when the Persona stuff starts to awaken. And I gotta say, this game is so beautiful.
Yeah, even just looking at like what's been released so far of screenshots, trailers, etc. It's a good looking game.
It doesn't really do it justice when you're actually playing it. Like especially in the battles, even like a simple action like the way that you attack an enemy is just like, it looks really cool, right? It's super engaging. And the way that it'll shift into a battle is so fluid and so attractive. The way that the post-battle stats appear is so fluid and attractive. Like this UI is pretty much sex. I just want to say that. It really is. I'm just like drooling the entire time.
I really appreciate games that put like the all those little details and pay so much attention to them.
And Elliot wasn't wrong. Like I'm basically in the first dungeon. Like the first portion of the game is kind of figuring out what the heck is going on with this castle thing,
mm-hmm.
and what is going on. And like you meet the Morgana, the little cat avatar, and it's a lot more interesting than the was it not the Tartarus? I don't know. The big tower from Persona 3, mm-hmm. and the various themed dungeons in Persona 4, like they are a lot more. You can definitely see that the actual environments aren't as interesting as the characters to look at, mm-hmm. but it's still a hand created, and it's a little more like the map design is more engaging as a right. result. So,
sweet. Definitely looking forward to the translation then, because I am not attempting it in Japanese.
Yeah, I really need to just stop right now. I kind of want to finish the first arc.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that I can like say that I've finished the first arc and maybe like get some more video and write some more impressions. But I'm pretty busy. And also, I think I'm on the review for this one, which is daunting to say the least.
Yeah.
So I've got plenty of time to play frickin' Persona 5.
Yeah. When is the translation coming out again? Do we have like a set release date? I don't remember.
We do. February 14th.
Oh, that's right. Valentine's Day.
Yep.
Sweet. Mm.
Give your significant other the gift of Persona 5, right?
Yeah. Here you go, David. I'll be taking this back. Thank you.
I can already tell that this game is going to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out at the perfect time. It's coming out kind of in a dead period. It's coming out at the period of time when a bunch of Japanese games usually come out. It's going to be on the PS4 and the PS3. So a lot of people are going to be able to pick it up. This game has been anticipated for years now. It's going to have crazy good word of mouth. I think that this game is going to be a really big deal, and I can't wait. This is super exciting.
Do you see Persona, maybe even Persona 5, being the game that drives Persona like really into the mainstream the way that Final Fantasy VII did to Final Fantasy?
Honestly, I can't say, because it's very anime.
Oh, yeah.
In that respect, that may limit its quote-unquote mainstream appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so is Final Fantasy, right? But
yeah.
Final Fantasy has like a real legacy to it. And for whatever reason, I think it's always had kind of a broad crossover appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's always gone for more of kind of a real life look in a way. It's always done like the in-engine cutscenes. It's never had, or it's rarely had, actual hand-drawn anime stuff.
That's true.
And Persona like makes no bones whatsoever about being kind of a hand-drawn, very Japanese, very anime game.
Yeah, I guess the whole point that it's set around a school, that just kind of says it all.
Not only that, but it's like 100 hours.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
But on the other hand, you know, like, it's beautiful in like the Studio Ghibli kind of way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it is just a sight to behold, and in that respect. And of course, like I said, the word of mouth for this game is going to be gigantic.
Yeah.
So I think it will certainly do well. It'll be great for streaming.
Yeah, I'm definitely rooting for it.
Yeah, I think we all are.
Yes.
All right, Nadia. So just as we already mentioned earlier today in the news, Wasteland 3 will be kickstarted on October 5th. Wasteland 2 and Wasteland, of course, created by Brian Fargo, who was also behind the Fallout series, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Wasteland was kind of the precursor to the Fallout series. And
it was.
Wasteland 2 was kind of hailed as a return to quote-unquote real Fallout,
mm-hmm.
Which a lot of people, in the sense that you're in like a post-apocalyptic dystopian world, you are making all kinds of interesting decisions that will affect the world around you, you can deal with situations in nonviolent ways,
yeah.
but at the same time, you are, well, it's an RPG, right?
So yeah.
There's definitely combat. And it's a squad-based game, squad-based RPG, which is interesting. But yeah, so Wasteland 3, like we were looking at the screenshots, already looks way more attractive than Wasteland 2, which itself looked really good, but was kind of more of that mid-2000s kind of look.
Yeah, it was very good for it. It was a Kickstarter game, as I recall. And yeah, for the budget it had, like that was, it looked good. But 3 looks really nice.
Yeah, it was the first wave. Wasteland 2 was the first wave of Kickstarter games. And if you can believe it, it's already been 4 years.
Jeez.
Since Kickstarter really exploded.
Yeah.
Because that was 2012, early 2013.
Yeah.
Same time as Mighty No. 9. Yeah.
Gracious.
Nadia's laughing so she doesn't cry.
That's all they can do at this point.
And Wasteland 3, so obviously they're kickstarting again. And they're talking about how, like, the big donations in a lot of respects have dried up. But it's still quite possible to build a community. Really ambitious funding target. It's in excess of, like, $2 million.
Yeah.
And they're saying that they're going to also use some of the, like, $12 million that they made from just selling Wasteland 2 to also partly fund it. So they are really, like, going all in on this game. This is not some little indie game, right?
Yeah, you're right. And like I was saying to you earlier, that's kind of a nice example of a nice Kickstarter success. They made some money off the game they made, and they are going to use some of those profits to make a sequel. That's very nice. I like that.
Yeah, and they're reinvesting it back into the actual games rather than kind of lining their pockets.
Oh, right,
which,
yeah.
Hey, I'm never going to say that developers shouldn't be able to live well, okay?
But yeah, no kidding.
It is nice to see that the money that was donated is going to be reinvested into the project.
Yes.
And it sounds like they're really, like, kind of going crazy on it. What were we going to say, Nadia?
Oh, I was just going to say, in this instance, it's a nice drama-free cycle, because usually you hear about Kickstarter funds being misappropriated or vanishing into the ether, or
yeah,
the game was a flop, so there's never going to be another one. But so, yeah, I'm very happy to hear about this.
Yeah, well, Wasteland 2 turned out to be pretty much what everybody wanted.
Yeah.
Though I didn't get a chance to play that one because it came out at kind of a bad time. So I think that Wasteland 3 immediately appeals to me because there's snow.
We were talking about that too.
Yeah.
You miss snow, don't you? You're all the way over there on the West Coast.
In a way. I miss snow in the sense that it's a novelty now.
Exactly, yeah.
I go visit snow, and then I go home when I'm done with it.
That must be nice to visit snow and be like, goodbye, snow. I've had enough time with you. I'm going back to the West Coast now. And meanwhile, in Toronto, I'm just like, trying to wade through the snow that's up to my neck because I'm 5 feet tall.
Yeah, it's like a really strong nostalgic element for me. Sort of like when I was playing Persona 5, just to quickly go back to Persona 5, like, it's set in Tokyo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so Tokyo, like, the first day of school, or the first real day of school, I guess, like, it shows little cuts of your commute, right? Like, mm-hmm. You step out into an alley. I swear to God, I've seen that alley a million times in Japan with that kind of coffee shop front a million times. Head to the train station. It cuts to you standing on the crowded train next to the guy who's holding up like a PS Vita. being all crushed inside. Popping out of the train, walking through the gates. It's raining out, so you got your umbrella. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, memories rushing in. It's
seasons.
Crazy. Yes, seasons, exactly.
These.
Well, Tokyo's seasons are a little weird, but I digress. So Wasteland 3, I think the most intriguing thing is the multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
They are going for kind of a synchronous and asynchronous multiplayer thing where, like, you can have your friends, like, taking care of quests for you, but also bringing about unintended consequences that, like, you can pay off debts for your friends, or you can just leave it be and, like, reduce your reputation from them. Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, so, like, basically your friends can kind of screw up neighborly relations, I suppose, and you gotta kind of fix that.
Yeah,
if you want.
Though, if you want, you can boot out your friends and just go to a different timeline. So,
yeah,
that's nice.
That's a good option to have, because if your friend is constantly trolling your neighbors and you're constantly paying off, like, the tipped cows or whatever, then that would get costly after a while.
Yeah, if your friend is, like, always just going around and shooting everybody up, and you're just like, oh my God, okay, like, I'm out of here. I don't want everybody to hate me.
It's like Game of Thrones with Drogon, who's always eating people's goats, and so what's-her-name has to keep paying off the farmers.
Did you say this is Game of Thrones?
It just reminds me of it. Like, I'm just kind of, like, you know, just going by the bits and pieces I know about it. I know that Dany, whatever her name is, the Mother of Dragons, she has the dragon, Drogon, who keeps screwing around, like, eating people's goats and whatnot, and farmers are coming up to her saying, hey, your stupid dragon's eating my goats. Who's going to pay for this? Oh, I guess I am again.
You know, I'm actually caught up on Game of Thrones, but and sorry, people have been spoiled on this Game of Thrones stuff. But I did not know that the dragons had names. I just knew them as Danny's dragons. Oh, like there's the big one and also the mean one and the flamey one. Oh, wait, that's all of them.
The big one's Drogon, the one who's an asshole and is always going around destroying things. Yes. The other two, I forget their names. Something with an R and something with a V. Here's the thing about Game of Thrones and me. I go to YouTube and I look up the stuff with the dragons and I'm good.
That's just fair enough. She's like, I just want to see the dragons.
Yep, I'm done.
It's all good. Another thing that, I mean, this is kind of a minor point that kind of caught my eye, but it sounds like they're going to be a lot more elaborate with their presentation. They're using XCOM, Enemy Unknown as an example in terms of breaking from the isometric perspective for actual cutscenes.
Yes.
That's kind of cool. Like, I think it brings you a little more into the story rather than just clicking through the text with your isometric perspective.
Yeah, so I didn't get to play 2 either, but if you could just jump right into 3, I might give this a try. Of course, it's going to be a long time before we see it, but
it has to get funded. Yeah, it has to get funded. I'd say 2018, 2019.
Yeah, so Bloodstain comes out.
Yeah, well, Star Citizen will not be out by then.
we know this for sure.
I want to make a wager on that one. Star Citizen will not be in full release by the time Wasteland 3 comes out.
Yeah, we can count on that.
Yeah, but Wasteland 3, planning on playing it? Kind of interested?
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to see. You know, as my grandmother would say, I should be alive by then. But, why not? If the time's right, sure.
Yeah, well, Wasteland, of course, is a classic RPG, and I think one of the things that Kickstarter really did for the genre was that it kind of reversed, or it didn't reverse the trend, but it gave a space for RPGs that were really dense and not as mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
It gave developers kind of room to be extremely creative and play toward a particular niche.
Yes.
And Fallout has gone more and more mainstream, and look, you can argue with whether or not it's too action-based, whether or not the quests aren't good enough, etc., especially in Fallout 4, but it's very much, it's aiming for the widest audience possible, where Wasteland is aiming for hardcore, old-school RPG fans.
Yes.
Who want to have a direct impact on the world, who want to be able to do quests in a lot of interesting ways, who want to kind of tell their own story. And I'm glad that there's room for both.
Yeah, so am I. I'm really glad that we have those options. So there's no need to fight. Everyone can have what they want.
Everybody just give each other a hug. It's okay. There's the Western RPG fans, Eastern RPG fans, MMO fans, sports fans. Let's just all come in here. Let's give each other a hug. Are we all good?
Hold hands. Sing.
Yes, hold hands. Sing. Let's buy the world a Coke.
I remember that commercial.
All right. Okay, so Wasteland 3, the funding goes live on October 5th. So if you're interested in that one, toss some money that way. I don't fund games anymore because I don't want the headache of having to review a game while saying that I backed it.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I really care. And B, I don't know, like I funded Mighty Number 9 for $60 and I didn't even cash the freaking key that they gave me. So
that was worth it.
I also don't think I ever got my box art, but I don't care because the box art was pretty ugly.
Yeah, it was awful. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I rarely fund games. And if a game comes out that's been kickstarted, I have no problem just buying it when I'm interested.
Yeah, no, I can wait for it to come out.
Yeah.
Though, if they ever kickstart Valkyrie Profile 3, yeah, I'll kick in some money for that.
I imagine you would.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so Nadia, we have a mailbag question today.
Hooray!
Or not a mailbag question, kind of a response. Uh-huh. So we were kind of ragging on Dragon Quest and Mobile the other day.
Uh-huh.
Well, we have a defender here.
Uh-huh.
So Sean Kirkland says, "Hey guys, love the show this week, and I wanted to write in to talk about Dragon Quest on Mobile. You guys were very quick to dismiss them, as was I before I gave it a try, but I'm now 23 hours into Dragon Quest V on my phone. At my current pace, it will be the first Dragon Quest that game I've ever completed by the end of the week." Oh, good job.
Oh, nicely done.
You picked a good one, too. DQ5.
Yes, you can't do better.
Dragon Quest 4, 5, and 6 are all available as enhanced ports of the DS games. If you enjoyed these, then you have already played a Dragon Quest game in portrait mode. Now you can play them without a hinge in the middle of the screen.
That's true.
Not that portrait versus widescreen makes a difference, since the games were designed to be played in 4:3. There is a really great cloud save feature, so I can switch between my phone and a tablet whenever I want, and the battle visuals look great on both. The only complaint I can see people having is with the virtual D-pad, but they made it very customizable, and I think it actually works quite well. The mobile ports are definitely worth playing. I think they are overlooked because the port of Dragon Quest VIII was so underwhelming. But you can't go wrong with the first six games. They cost about half as much as the DS games, and the money will actually make its way back to the developer as opposed to some guy on eBay. Keep on adventuring, Sean.
Thanks, Sean, for writing in. That's a great letter.
Yeah.
I will say, if you look up my reviews of Dragon Quest for mobile, I think I wrote several for at least GameZebo.com, if not other venues. I agree with you. Even though I might have ragged a bit on the mobile ports in our last show when we talked about it, I am glad they exist, put it that way. Because, as you say, I didn't even consider that the developers are actually getting paid for their work directly. That's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up. But I am so pro Dragon Quest that I just want people to play it, period. And if that means they play it on mobile, then they play it on mobile. I am totally okay with that. The virtual D-pad's a bit of a pain, and being stuck in portrait mode is a bit of a pain. But definitely, if you have no other option, if your options are Dragon Quest on mobile or nothing, then definitely go for mobile, because I have certainly played worse mobile RPGs than the Dragon Quest adaptations.
Absolutely. Well, Dragon Quest VIII was pretty bad.
And Dragon Quest, but yeah, that's coming to 3DS anyway, and that's where it probably belongs. So
yeah, I think Dragon Quest VIII is a little bit elaborate for a phone. Like, it was killing my battery.
Yeah.
And when I reviewed it at the time, I think I still had an iPhone 5. But
yeah.
Like, the iPhone 5S hadn't even come out yet, and I think it was built for the 5S.
Yeah, it was really just pushing even the 5, and that was a time when the 5, as you say, was still pretty new.
Yeah, so it was quite choppy. I have a 6S now, and I'm sure it would run fine, but I don't think Dragon Quest VIII is really ideal for that platform.
No, I am just waiting for the 3DS version of that game, and that's why I was actually very surprised when I heard, because I was following Dragon Quest on mobile, of course, every release, and I was waiting for 7. I was thinking, what are they going to do with 7? But then when I heard it was coming to 3DS, and that was getting released in English, I was just like, oh, that's great. My only complaint about the Dragon Quest mobile games that's like really significant is Dragon Quest 3. I feel like they could have done better for that, because they went with like a feature phone port of the game and just kind of ported it over to smartphones. So you don't get animated enemy sprites, which you even have on the Game Boy Color. And anyone who's a fan of Dragon Quest knows that the animations that the monsters have are just incredible. So
yes, they're a lot of fun to look at. Gives them a lot of personality.
So everything else about the port looks nice. The music's nice. The like little overworld graphics are nice. But just it feels like you could tell it's a feature phone game that they ported over. And that was a little disappointing, because 3 is one of the best and it deserves the best.
So this is what I will say about Dragon Quest on mobile. Once upon a time, I used to bring my DS with me everywhere. And like, if I was on a train or something, I would break out my DS. Because, I mean, the alternative was to read a book or
God forbid,
listen to music or stare into space, right?
Mm-hmm.
My DS was my best friend on my commute when I was living in Japan, because I would just sit down on the train, hunker down, put on my headphones, and I was good to go for the next hour.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I was just completely immersed in these games. Well, times have changed, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, now, like, I barely bring my 3DS anywhere. It feels a little weird to break out my 3DS in public, which is, unless I'm at a gaming event. I don't play it on the bus like I used to. In, like, 2011, I used to play my DS all the time on the bus to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I always have my phone with me, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are kind of the same way. And it's just a lot easier and more seamless to just like jump into an RPG or like some game on your phone and play it that way. And I don't blame people for wanting to tackle the series that way.
No,
and I think especially for people who are maybe a little bit younger, say, who grew up with smartphones,
mm-hmm.
which is a weird thing to say. that is like a much more natural way to play the series. And then you can play it on your tablet, you can play it on your phone. And like, that is a great way to experience the series, because as Sean and you were saying, the ports are really good. So yeah. Except for 8.
Except for 8. But if you sat me down in a room and said, Nadia, would you rather play Dragon Quest on 3DS or on iPhone, then I would pick 3DS every time. I will admit that. But to repeat myself, Dragon Quest on mobile is far better than no Dragon Quest at all.
Absolutely. And if you haven't played these games, just go play them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe start with 4, and then 4, 5, and 6. And then if you really like those, go back to 1, 2, and 3.
I would even argue 3 is not a bad place to start, but
it's not terrible.
Yeah.
But it still has that kind of 8-bit gloss.
It definitely does come across as retro.
4, like, even though 4 came out on the Famicom, it maybe because it came out on the DS, it felt a little more modern than 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, it was very ambitious for its time, and it still holds up quite well. But 4 is not one of my favorites. Honestly, if you were to like give me like ask me for a recommendation, I'd definitely say start with 5.
Yeah, I would start with 5 too, because that's where I started, and I am biased. All right, Sean, thanks for writing in today. And if you want to comment on our topics, feel free to write us in at cat.bailey@usgamer.net or send me a PM over on the site. If I find your email interesting, I will read it on the show and we will discuss it. And yeah, and so do that.
Yes,
and
please.
In the meantime, I think we're going to move on. We're going to go to the next segment, which is the discussion of sports games as RPGs with Brian. We'll be right back. All right, I am here with today's special guest, Brian Weedye, also known as Pasta Padre, who is best known for his coverage of the sports game genre. We go a few years back, having appeared together on the Hit the Pass podcast, and before that, the Press Row podcast. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kat. Excited to be on and talk a little bit with a different audience, I guess. It's
Very different. Usually we're talking about Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest and Fallout on this podcast, but as it turns out, sports games a little bit closer to the RPG genre than you might expect. And I think that it goes double for this year. So this year, as you know, FIFA is introducing a story mode, and it's called The Journey. FIFA 17 came out this week, and it introduces a character named Alex Hunter on his quest to go through the Premier League.
Yes.
And I found it pretty interesting because it borrows a lot from the RPG genre. Out of curiosity, have you had a chance to play The Journey, and what did you think?
Yeah, I'm a couple hours into The Journey. I haven't gotten as far as I want to. I'm still working towards a review for that game. But it is. You mentioned in one of our podcasts that they took a bit of a different approach than the story mode you find in the NBA 2K series. And I see that because it is. You're basically playing through someone else and through their, no pun intended, their journey, right? From when they were a child and dreamed of reaching a certain level of play and then going up in the ranks towards that and joining one of the Premier League teams and getting to be, play out these moments within it and deal with all the drama that comes along with it. So yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting take on the story mode or on the more traditional career type mode where you're building up your character and now you're within a narrative, a larger narrative. And I think that's really become a popular way to go about presenting these modes lately.
Yeah, in the past, they've always been more like simulators, right? I mean, you would have tons of stats, and you would be manipulating rosters and everything. But this is the first time that you've, like, The Journey isn't the first time, but it's only been within the past couple years that we've really started to get into actual role-playing. And as somebody who's been following the sports genre for many years now, I'm curious, why do you think it's only just now that we've started to get into this kind of territory that feels so natural for sports games?
Yeah, you know, with sports games, I think for many years, there was a traditional way that they were built. There was a traditional certain content within the games that you found in pretty much all of them. You had the franchise modes and online modes, and lately that's branched out to the Ultimate Team, the team building, card collecting modes, and then these story modes. And I think it's a technological thing. They can do a lot more with the story. I mean, we do have past examples of stories in sports games. I mean, you can go back to NCAA, well, not NCAA football, but they did have the career mode, which kind of had some of these elements. But story modes in Blitz the League and NBA 09, The Inside. Those kind of predate or established that kind of mode. And then now you see these companies which have a great level of resources at their disposal, because they're making so much money through other means, not even just selling the game, but through digital content, that they can now fund these type of things where they are bringing in motion capture actors, and they're really building out and fleshing out these modes, and they're hiring the likes of Spike Lee to do them for them.
Yeah.
And it's a great way also to promote the game. I think there's two major points to these modes, and that's the first is, they can really promote them. I mean, if you look at how is FIFA being promoted this year, a great percentage of it is based around the story mode, around being this character of Alex Hunter, of playing through his journey. If you look at NBA 2K, their story mode encompasses a lot of their marketing. But also, it's a good way to onboard people who aren't necessarily experts on these games. We talk about how complicated sports games can be to someone who is new to them. And these, you're playing as one character, makes things easier. You don't have to control 5 on a basketball court. You don't have to control 10 or 11 on the pitch in soccer. But you can get in there and you can play as one character, just focus on what that one character has to do, and still feel like you're achieving something. So I think they're accomplishing multiple things with these story modes and with the role-playing elements within them.
Yeah, and it's something that's immediately understandable, right? I mean, versus say, oh God, what I'm worrying about the Rule 5 draft, and yeah. I'm like having to manage this stupid salary cap and what is going on, as opposed to this character is starting off at the very bottom and his goal is to become the greatest soccer player or something.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can grapple with that. Like, everybody understands that implicitly. It's been the subject of a billion sports movies.
Yeah.
And it's just like really solid fodder for a sports game. And in terms of the RPG element, like, it fits in perfectly with, you know, like kind of this gamey element of growth, right? Mm-hmm. Like watching your stats go up, steadily kind of rising in level. In FIFA, it's characterized as an overall, right? I mean, you're like, you start off as like 60 some overall, and your goal is to get into like the 80s and maybe into the 90s. Mm-hmm. And the way that that happens is that there's kind of a, I guess you could call it a tech tree, right? Under various categories. So you have like the dribbling, you have the defense, you have stamina, you have pace and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you get skill points as you're playing, and you can apply those to the different abilities.
Yep.
And this is very, very RPG-ish. And it's something that sports games have had for a little while now. But meshing that in with a sport, with an actual story mode, is just kind of a perfect fit.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of bounce back and forth between the two sides of things. And like you said, yeah, you're working on increasing your ratings through playing well in the matches and then, you know, how you do in these drills in between the matches also. Plus there's the element of, they have like this conversation system where you're going to be interviewed and asked questions, or you're going to be talking with teammates or whoever it might be, and they give you a way to respond to it, right? And so you can respond in FIFA. It's, you know, are you fiery or are you cool, or you can have a balanced option. So you have these different type of responses, and that influences your relationships with the players, with the managers, with the fans. So there's so many different things going in there. Plus, like you said, you're working just on your ratings. And there's also like a skill tree where you can kind of select what type of bonuses you want for your player and things of that nature for what they actually do for you. So yeah, there's a ton, there's a ton of stuff going on in these modes. But at the same time, like you said, it's kind of simplified in a way that you can actually learn as you're going through this. And they build it that way, I think, to be accessible, to be, hey, you know, these drills are going to teach you to be better in the actual games. Once you get experience in the games, you're going to get better there. And once you do that, you're going to be building the character up where you can do more fantastical things out there. So I think it's a mix that really works well for sports games. And you see the way consumers respond to it as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the conversation choices, because in the grand scheme of things, they're not like overly impactful, but it defines like, well, among other things, it defines like how your manager sees you and how much more willing they are to actually play you, which is kind of cool, because if you're not doing super well and your manager doesn't trust you, they're not going to start you.
They shouldn't. Yeah.
Makes sense, right? Yeah. But if you keep going with Fiery, like the little bar will go up past Fiery and Alex will start kind of sounding like maybe a little bit of a tiny bit of a diva in his responses, which I like. I like that. Or you can go to where he's like ice cold, like Iceman. Arr. Yeah. So, yes, I was just doing the bitey thing. But yeah. So... I think that in a way they kind of got that from, say, like Mass Effect and that kind of thing, because EA has done that sort of thing in the past, and there's a lot of technology sharing going on. So this one kind of interesting example, maybe more subtle, of a sports game borrowing outside of its established world. And we're now at a point where like the tools are universal enough that they can like really kind of go outside the established genre and start borrowing elements from other genres. And that's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's when a lot of people think of sports games, right? It's not, they just figure everybody gets the game, they go online, or everybody gets the game and they play the franchise mode where you're controlling the team and you're going through multiple years. But yeah, there's so much that goes into these sports games that a lot of people don't realize, and it is RPG even in the sense of controlling a team and not just a player. There's so many decisions you have to make that influence so many other different things, and they do branch out and they do borrow ideas from other genres, and it's impressive really on a yearly basis, because once again they're doing these year to year to year, as opposed to many of the games you've mentioned take 2 to 3 years really to build out. And so, you know, they have the base that they can work on, but they do a lot in a year. And you start to see that over time. And this is where it's evolved to now.
So this is what I'm kind of worried about. I'm kind of worried that they're going to say, well, that's good enough. And we're going to get the same story of Alex Hunter and like subsequent FIFAs going forward.
Really?
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's an arc that just seems like it's like, okay, that's that one arc.
Sure.
And their explicit goal with this was to kind of onboard people, right? To kind of make it a FIFA boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes me wonder if they're just going to go, well, we're just going to keep bringing it back year after year. And if they do that, that's going to be a real mistake, I think.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they did that, just because NBA 2K has already set kind of the expectation that you're going to get a new story, a brand new story every year, new characters, new innovations, and everything. And that's kind of the gold standard for as far as content. I mean, you can debate what is the best sports game, but NBA 2K probably has the most content, pure content, different types of ways to play, different number of features. And they do that on a yearly basis. And so I think consumers would probably look at, if they did that, and say, FIFA, why would you not advance this to the next year? You started and you did, okay, Premier League, that's great. There's a whole lot of soccer around the world that doesn't revolve around Premier League. So
it'd be interesting if they did the national teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or had it where you were playing in like the Bundesliga or something. Mm-hmm. I think that's less likely because it's so Premier League centric, but
yeah, but there are a number of options, and I would think that they would want to do that. Again, like I mentioned earlier, it's a great way for them to market. Otherwise, if they have the same thing in their next year, they can't really go out there and say, all right, now you get to be Alex Hunter. You know, it's just already there. So they'd have to come up with some other big new idea, most likely, because FIFA is the biggest sports game in the world in terms of sales. It's one of the biggest video games, period, in terms of sales on a yearly basis. So their expectations are naturally high for the series, and I think if they just kind of gave it up and said, all right, this is just the basic, this is our standard story, and you get to play the same thing every year, or you ignore it, I think that would be considered a disappointment.
Well, you mentioned NBA 2K, and of course we would be totally remiss if we didn't bring up NBA 2K, which has been doing this for a few years now. Like, mm-hmm. For a number of years, last generation, their kind of career mode was seen as kind of the gold standard, but they really upped the ante with this generation, mm-hmm. by actually introducing a story. And each year they've kind of done a different thing, right? Like, so the first year was just like your rise to the top. You had like a rival and everything. And then the next year you were the undrafted free agent, mm-hmm. and you were trying to break into the league and change everybody. And the year after that, they had Spike Lee, and it was a Spike Lee joint.
Yeah, which had its share of issues for sure.
It was a thing. Look, I appreciate their ambition.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And this year, like, you have a friend who's played by Michael B. Jordan, mm-hmm. and you two can, like, become, like, super friends.
Yeah, you're like joined at the hip almost, and to the point where it unlocks a feature in gameplay that's completely unique.
Yeah, you can control both and like do alley oops and stuff. It's pretty cool.
That's what I did. I just took control of Michael B. Jordan's character and threw myself alley oops, which is, you know, that sounds really probably foreign to a lot of people who don't understand what's going on. But yeah, I mean, they've got that once again, as I talked about, they've got so many different ideas every year, something new.
So where FIFA is like a much more traditional kind of story, the my career in NBA 2K, I feel like for one thing, it's meant to be like all encompassing, right? It is the career mode that you're playing in. Mm-hmm. You're creating this avatar who appears throughout the game in like many different contexts, and you can do like so much more than you can in FIFA.
Yeah.
Like for example, in NBA 2K, you can say sign with different teams. Mm-hmm. You can kind of control your character's destiny as they steadily grow. You're like you're having sponsorships, so you can make more and more money.
Yeah.
You can make friends with other characters in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have them come into your floor and play one-on-one. You and have, like, your own little practice court that you're steadily improving.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can decide to miss a practice and have your coach chide you.
That definitely happened, yeah.
So, yeah, you're right.
It even has grinding.
Oh,
so much grinding.
Yeah, that's one
grinding
of
grinding XP.
That's one of, the grind, and also just the what's necessary to we talked about in FIFA, upping your ratings and gaining skills and stuff. What's necessary to do that in NBA 2K is to grind through practice after practice and drill after drill. You can't simulate them, right? In FIFA, you can simulate them at a certain point.
But there's a much more intense level of role playing in NBA 2K. In the sense that, so for example, a couple of years ago, one moment that really stood out to me was I played through my first year successfully. I was on the Detroit Pistons, and I was getting ready to sign with a new team. Like, I was deciding, will I stay with the Pistons or will I go to the Knicks? And like Andre Drummond's like, no, don't go, man. Like, stay on the Detroit Pistons and uh-huh. we're going to be awesome.
The very, very terrible voice acting year?
Oh, it was so bad, but it was so great. I loved it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, should I stay on the Pistons? No, I'm going to the Knicks.
Yeah.
But it was a good like role playing moment, right? Yeah. Where like I actually had to give some pause because Andre Drummond really was counting on me. He was counting on me to stay with the Detroit Pistons. Can't let Andre Drummond down.
Yeah, it's the emotional ties, right? They're trying to create in any type of story mode, in any type of career mode, they want you to feel that. They want you to feel like, okay, I'm actually a part of this, and I'm actually in a world that's alive around me, not just my character. There's other stuff going on. There's other people impacted by what I do.
Yeah, and they introduced, like skill badges, like abilities that you can actually unlock, which is pretty cool, so that you can essentially unlock special moves for your character, like super moves, so that they become that more much more powerful when they're dribbling or they're shooting or what have you, doing layups and all that. So that is pretty cool. But there is one thing that I hope that RPGs never adopt from NBA 2K.
Okay, tell me. I'm curious.
Connecting to a server so that you can have everything stored server side using a in-game currency that can be purchased.
Yeah, that's a design decision that was horrible in NBA 2K14. Everything in the game was tied to servers that were down for, and I'm not exaggerating, there was one point where servers were down for well over a week in the holiday season, so you couldn't actually get on and play anything. Even your off, what's considered quote unquote offline franchise or anything, you couldn't do that because they're everything with their currency tied in the server. So they backed that up a little bit in recent years. There's a few dedicated offline modes, but for the most part, yeah, several modes, they all share the same currency. So, and that's actually one issue I have with NBA 2K that's different from some others. But yeah, that's, you know, you can tell that's all about money. And, you know, I don't think any of us think it's, you know, making money is a bad thing. They need to make money or else the games wouldn't exist. But the way in which they do it, it hampers the experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. But it seems like they're going to kind of stick with that going forward because, I mean, it's so tightly wound into the design at this point. I mean, it affects so many different things. Like, it affects pretty much all of the modes in some way, some more than others. And, I mean, I'm sure that they make a lot of money from it. If anything, I'm kind of shocked that EA hasn't copied it yet.
Well, yeah, I think what happens there is NBA 2K has been so well regarded, considered one of the best sports games, one of the best video games, period, the last few years, that they could get away with it. I'm not sure a Madden 3 years ago could have gotten away with that and really survived with consumers. So they had a little more leeway to work with. But and now they've pushed that far out, and there's not really a consumer outcry over it because everybody's just kind of used to it. They went so far with 2K14 that when they backed it up just slightly, everyone was like, okay, thank you, you know. But yeah, it's a very currency-driven game, and that's not unusual for sports games, but the way it affects so many different modes and the way the same currency flows through all those modes, and that's one of my major issues with it, is that you will make currency in your career, in your story mode, but that same currency is used in your franchise mode. It's the same currency that's used for your character in other modes. So you have to decide where you're going to spend that currency. Are you going to upgrade your character? Are you going to use it to unlock a certain feature in the franchise mode? Or, you know, there's so many different ways you can spend that currency. But outside of that, yeah, I mean, that is the major flaw, but most people have come to accept it.
All right. So as long as sports games are borrowing from other RPGs, I feel like we should take this to the logical limit. So I have a few ideas about other features that we have seen in RPGs that should start appearing into sports games. Are you kind of ready for this? All right, first one. You should be able to marry whoever you want on the team and then have a house and then have kids. So if you want to marry Andre Drummond, like kind of get gay married to Andre Drummond, you're good, right? And then you can go to Tamriel, have your own little house, have lots of little Andre Drummonds running around. I think that this could be really good for NBA 2K18.
Okay, so basically The Sims. Look, EA already has The Sims in their...
I'm thinking more like Skyrim, you know, like... So you're like go home and you're getting boosts from Andre. It'll go really well.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I mean, I don't know. Have we even had marriage at all in the stories? I don't think we have. We've had breakups.
We had a girlfriend in NBA 2K17 who kind of like appeared sometimes.
Yeah, and yeah, I think and at other times just disappeared. Like most relationships, right?
Yes.
But yeah, yeah. It's that would be an interesting element.
Here's another one.
Yeah.
Renegade and Paragon. All right, so you can be like either really good or really, really evil.
Well, I mean,
so essentially, and then you get signed by the New England Patriots.
Yeah, you can fit right in with Belichick. That you know, there are already a sense of that in some ways. Like we talked with the conversation systems, right? And so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, this was not something the leagues would probably allow, right? Because they don't want these images of players. Again, they're very sensitive to image of the league and image of the players. And the players' associations are very sensitive to that stuff, too. But yeah, I mean, you remember back with NCAA football in their career modes back about 10 years ago, you could get suspended. You if your grades weren't kept up, your grades, you know, your current grades, so they're and you know eventually NCAA is like no we don't want suspensions in the game but you know there are so many vile acts that go on that are committed or and there's so many good players in the world that people are happy to celebrate that you would like to see maybe some kind of balance there between you know attitudes and egos and motivations and cheating and stuff like that and you only really ever see that in unlicensed stuff.
PED plus 5 strength.
Well, we had that if you blitz the league where you could inject your player with stuff literally like during the game.
Deflate the balls plus 5 accuracy.
Yeah, this is all stuff that would work in an arcade unlicensed game. That's the only place it would ever happen.
All right, last one. Super moves. We need limit breaks.
Yeah.
Start like literally starting on fire. Actually, have you ever heard of Captain Tsubasa and like Prince of Tennis and those games?
Vaguely.
Yeah, they were Captain Tsubasa was a soccer sim on the Super Nintendo back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly famous manga, and you could actually activate super moves like the Tiger Shot. That would be that would have an excellent chance of scoring. And did you ever play Final Fantasy X?
No.
Oh, they had an entire sports game in Final Fantasy X, Brian.
I apologize.
It was called Blitzball.
Mm-hmm.
It was underwater, and you would actually like swim around, right? But it was like underwater soccer. It was 3D underwater soccer, and you could go around. You could go around the whole world and you could recruit blitzball players and put them on your team. You were actually building a team like franchise mode, right?
Wow, yeah.
And you were looking at their stats and everything. It was incredible. And you could learn special moves. And the main character, Titus, had the jet shot, which once you mastered it, you could, if you got in close enough, you could bounce the ball off like two defenders. And then it would like bounce into the goal automatically and you would get a goal. It was so broken. It was great. I loved it.
Sometimes the broken stuff is the most memorable. And that's, you know, we don't have those kind of experiences for the most part. I mean, there's so few arcade games that we have these days. I mean, there's a few coming back from independent developers who are doing interesting things. But that used to be a bridge to these like really super simulation hardcore sports games. There used to be a bridge of these arcadey games where you had special power-ups, special moves. You did stuff that's really not physically possible. That were just fun, about fun. And you don't really see that anymore. And people used to, at least this is definitely the case with me and a lot of people, when they're younger, they can pick up on those games. They start to learn kind of the fundamentals of a sport and then apply it to the more difficult game after that. And that's why we're always talking about accessibility with these sports games. We don't have those kind of moments, those kind of just purely fun experiences that like you just described.
Yeah, we're a long way from the days of like NHL 94.
Uh-huh.
Rocket League probably came the absolute closest to being able to capture that. Have you heard of a game called Pocket Card Jockey?
I don't believe so.
I've mentioned it on this on podcasts or this a few times. It's a horse racing game.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually incorporates some of what we're talking about. It has like kind of like super moves where the horse will like power up and get like really strong. And that it was developed by the same people who did Pokemon, actually. And I won't get too far into it, except that you do the various phases of the horse racing by playing solitaire. And mm-hmm. it works a lot better than you think. And believe it or not, it is a much more serious sim than you actually think, because it goes out of its way to like kind of be accurate to how all of the different horse traits, all of the different races. Like, you learn the terminology of horse racing, like the stalking and like the leading, and you're like going, whoever made these game, they are really, really into horse racing. But they have incorporated all of these wonderful, goofy, like fourth wall breaking humor and power ups and super moves. It's really remarkable, and I cannot recommend it enough, Brian.
Yeah, that's a great way to get people interested or engaged with something that they normally wouldn't otherwise, right? Horse racing is not something that you look at and say, well, there's a natural video game for me. I think for most people probably wouldn't think that way. And so, yeah, you need those kind of hooks. You need something that's different about it that you can say, well, you know, we're still based in reality. We're still respecting certain aspects of the sport. But, you know, we're going to give you something that's just a little more fun, a little more off the wall. And I think that's a smart way to approach it.
So at this point, fair to say that NBA 2K is the most RPG-ish of sports games that you're going to find?
Yeah. I think NBA 2K is. And again, it's one of the most difficult games to learn. But thankfully, that story mode, that career mode, is probably the most accommodating way to play the game. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, like you said, it is very much of a grind. But that's, you know, if I were to say, if someone were to ask me, I haven't played NBA 2K before, what should I do when I'm first going in there? I'd say you want to play the story mode, because you'll learn stuff through that, and you'll enjoy it in the process, because tutorials and things like that, just not really satisfying for most people. But there's a lot you can get out of the story mode, RPG wise, or just sitting back and kind of enjoying the ride as you go.
Yeah, it has a lot of really organic kind of role-playing moments. For example, the way you kind of get to know your friend is that you go to practice, because he's a practice fiend.
Yeah.
But like, if you just keep skipping practice, right, you're not going to really build up your friendship with him.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of other just like little moments like that that are kind of dependent on your decisions. It's not like a specific story point where the game will pause and go, decide now what your destiny of your character is going to be. No offense to FIFA or anything. I find the kind of choices like, oh, are you going to go to your like sponsorship thing today? Or are you going to go hang out with Boogie Cousins? Make your decision, whatever. I mean, both are fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get fans, or you're going to get respect. It's, yeah, there are decisions. I mean, there's no real like branching storylines, right? So it's still a linear kind of story, a little linear kind of path that you go down. But your character within that, you have a lot of control over how they develop, what they become, and how those relationships are cultivated with everyone else you're dealing with, your coach, your teammates, the fans, your agent. There's a lot of different things you're kind of juggling in that mode. And that keeps you busy, for sure.
Yeah, it's really good. All right, last question. Is this the future for sports games, or is just FIFA and NBA 2K doing what they do and being leaders in the genre?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's the future, but it's definitely a trend. And I think you're going to see these type of modes become a staple of sports games. I don't know if they're going to be the front and center forever, right? The next few years, I think that's definitely going to be the case. You're going to probably see it in Madden. You're probably going to see it in NHL eventually. Baseball seems like a natural one for it too. It's just
baseball's harder.
Baseball, yeah. I mean, that is a tough one. It's because that baseball in itself is a grind, right?
Yeah.
But it can also be a quicker experience if you limit it to just your at bats or just your pitches,
yes,
or whatever it might be. So there's different ways they can get around that. But yeah, I think it's at the very least a trend, and it's a popular one for a number of reasons. And it's engaging to people, and it's intriguing in ways that the other modes aren't necessarily. So I think, you know, in a few years, there may be something new. You know, it's been Ultimate Team for several years now. Now it's kind of these stories that complement everything else in the game. And I think that's probably the right way to put it. I think the story modes and the RPG elements really complement the base of the game in the best way that any particular mode could right now. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I don't know about future, but I definitely think it's a strong trend.
Yeah, I think EA is watching how this new mode does in FIFA very closely. Mm-hmm. And I think that with FIFA, they have found kind of what they want to do with it, which is to have sort of almost a Call of Duty-like campaign mode that's going to last you about 10 to 15 hours, like encapsulates the game nicely, lets you grow your character, has a defined beginning, middle, and end with some choices that you get to make. And then when you're done, you're done, and you can move on to Ultimate Team. Yeah. Which is where they really want you to go.
Yeah, and as I remember, you know, Fight Night Champion was also another one where
That was largely a great example.
Yeah, largely driven by the story. That was like the central thing in the game. But then after that, yeah, you can go play online. You can do any number of things. But you're right. That's a great point you just made, which is these story modes can bring in people that maybe otherwise wouldn't have played the game. And that's great for them because in order to make money off of consumers post-release with digital content, with digital purchases, they need to have the game first. And that's why free-to-play is so popular on mobile, because people can get into the games where these publishers, where the developers, they can make the money, but they need the people there first. So as long as there's something compelling about the products to get people in to where they can later spend money, I mean, that's where the investments for EA, for 2K, for whoever it might be that has to go now, is we have to find something that's compelling, that we can market, and that people are going to enjoy. And it doesn't necessarily have to last 9 months or until the next game arrives. It just has to give people enough reason to want the game, to play the game, to get hooked on the game, and then to spend on the game.
And lastly, well, as I've always said, I am both an RPG nerd and a sports fan. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that goes hand in hand, an appreciation for stats, an appreciation for watching a team or a character go from kind of zero to the best that there is. And now the story modes just add an extra element to that. So, like, these two things are... They occupied a very similar place in my heart. And Brian, you should play more RPGs.
Yeah, if I had the time, I might do that.
Time. That's the funny thing about these sports games. Very time consuming.
If you want to have any success in them, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just about you have to spend the time to learn them. You have to spend the time to then excel at them. And then it's for a single game, in most of these sports games, just to play a single game, it's anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour.
Yep.
So it's a huge investment. Plus, they all tend to release at the same time of the year.
Always.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, we can find you on Pasta Padre and, of course, the Hit the Pass podcast. Where else can we find you?
I also write for Sporting News and on Twitter, at Pasta Padre, if you'd like to follow me. I appreciate that. You know, it's been awesome coming on, Kat. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Brian, thanks for coming on the show. And we will be right back to wrap everything up.
Everybody get up. It's time to slam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Space Jam. It's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right.
All right, and we're back. And this is the end of the episode. Acts of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, all of these wonderful places where you can download RPG podcasts. At some point, I'm going to get onto Spotify, I swear to God. You can find me on Twitter at @_catbot. You can find Nadia on Twitter at @NadiaOxford. And check out her blog, Tiny Girl, Tiny Games.
Yes.
Did you write anything interesting this week, Nadia?
No, I've been basically... We're getting to that time of the year where we're everything is... just games, 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 reviews, reviews, reviews. But I did write something on US Gamer about Undertale, basically looking back at it a year later and seeing if it holds up, because of course it was just critically acclaimed across the board when it first came out. So is it still critically acclaimed in my eyes? Well, find out.
Spoiler, it is.
Oh, you ruined it.
I ruined it. I need to finish that game.
I
definitely need to finish that game. It's good. It was good. What I played of it was good.
But... If nothing else, even if you're not a fan of the game, you gotta listen to that soundtrack.
Oh, God, yes. It's such a good soundtrack. No, yes. In a lot of respects, it's a really, really interesting game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, go check out Nadia's article on the site. Does it hold up? It's a series that we do on a fairly regular basis. I just did XCOM 2. She just did Undertale. We got a Mario Maker one. Mm-hmm. And we also did Metal Gear Solid 5 at one point. We like to look back on games like a year later with the benefit of hindsight and just go, does it hold up? Do we still like this game? Like, has our opinions kind of changed? Because, I mean, games are long, right?
Oh,
and
yes.
And like your initial impressions, like sometimes like with the benefit of hindsight, your opinion can change. I know that happens to me with sports games all the time. So it's useful to look back, I think.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Get a fresh perspective. You know, sometimes things that are happening around you might have affected your review at the time. It's just good to clear your head and look back.
Absolutely. All right. So you can check out also US Gamer as a whole on social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, you know, the usuals. It's all US Gamer Net. Mm-hmm. Make sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, say nice things about us, because we have fragile egos and we want the validation from our audience. We like to hear from you.
We need the hugs.
Yes. Do all of those things. We stream on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and so you can follow our streams, and this is good. I just streamed Persona 5. Mm-hmm. You can find the archive stream up on YouTube, US GamerNet. All right. I have no idea what we're going to be talking about next week, but I'm sure that we're going to have plenty of stuff to talk about, because we always find stuff to talk about.
We do. There's always something going on in the world of RPGs. Thank God.
Thank God. I mean, it's been enough that I've been able to continue doing a freaking podcast about RPGs in one way or another for like 6 years now. So.
Yeah, we're still going.
Still going.
So we'll be here next week too.
Yes, exactly. All right. For Nadia, Brian Weedeye, thanks for coming on the show, Brian, and myself. I've been Cat Bailey, and until next time, happy adventuring.